Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to Just Transitions, and in studio with me today, we've got Patty DeMarco. Patty, welcome back. What's going on?
Thank you, Charles. This is a wonderful opportunity we have today to talk about a former steel mill site that is turning into a green whole community under the influence of the Rebecca Flora, who is the project coordinator for the Hazelwood Green Projects, which is a project of the Almano authorized agent for the Almano group, which is developing this whole former site of a steel mill, which is now going to turn into a really wonderful green community.
Patty, we have talked about brownfields before.
Oh, yeah.
They're a lot of work
by
any stretch of the imagination. But what you're telling me right now is here in the city of Pittsburgh, we're remediating a brownfield with the old LTV Coke site, right?
That's the LTV Coke site. That's right.
All right. Well, I'm excited to hear about this. So what's going on?
Well, what's going on is the city actually did a lot of the hazardous remediation to get the site ready. And we have a developer that came in. Rebecca Flora has been joining us from a long stint with the Green Building Alliance, both locally and nationally. And Rebecca, welcome to our show. You can tell us about the Hazelwood Green Work Project and how that has evolved in the last couple of years.
Hi, Charles and Patty. Where do you start? There's just so much. I mean, the rich history of this site and its connection to the community and how that all related to really part of an entire industrial heritage that included what is now Southside Works and the Pittsburgh Technology Center site. So you really have to look holistically at what was there during that industrial era when we were feeding steelmaking from around the country, and then how that relates to their adjacent neighborhoods and communities. And so there's just so many layers and pieces of this. So where do you want to start?
Well, I'd like to start with, first of all, what is the organization and what is the objective of turning this former heavy industry site? And how big is it? It's a number of acres, right?
Right. This project is really unique in a number of ways. Yeah. I've worked on sustainable development projects around the world. Mm-hmm. And what makes it unique are some key features. One, it's 178 acres in the urban core of the city of Pittsburgh. The second thing is that it's really adjacent to this amazing neighborhood that, yes, has experienced a lot of disinvestment over the last few decades since the steel mill did shut down.
That's Hazelwood.
And so, and that's the Hazelwood neighborhood. And then you really have to think of Greater Hazelwood.
Yes.
And the other communities that really are part of that greater area. And so the opportunity to really integrate this large development site into that broader neighborhood is really important to us. The other aspect that makes it unique, I think, is just its relationship to our university district. We have world-renowned universities. They are absolutely the economic engine right now that's driving this new innovation economy. And so our proximity to those researchers, the educational programs, the startups that are coming out of those universities, I think, is phenomenal. Absolutely attracting interest around the globe. The other element that we really cannot underestimate, which is one that I think Pittsburgh is very fortunate to have, is our foundations and the legacy that basically they reflect from basically a lot of that industrial heritage. And so those foundations, as the owners, and that was essentially at this point in time, the three foundations include the Heinz Endowments, the Richard King Mellon Foundation, and the Benedum Foundation, who basically came together and said, this site is just too important. It's our last remaining major riverfront property in the city. Let's buy it. Let's be patient. Let's wait for the right time to make sure that we can really think about what this site should be in the future. That's very unique. When I meet with companies, I say, we are not your traditional real estate developer.
That's right. It isn't like whatever you want to put here happens. It's like we have a plan, and it's going to reflect the future, and it's going to reflect green focused industries, residences, and commercial operations. And you have a test site down there for Uber, right? Aren't they doing some, they've done some preliminary infrastructure in there. There's a road that goes through there now, and they've got areas laid out. So I think they're looking at how we can operate this whole thing as a model of a green, integrated, sustainable community.
Yeah, before we talk about Uber, let me just kind of move back and talk about the vision.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is really more than just a plan that sort of becomes stale. There is a vision for this site, and it is very much framed within a sustainable development planning framework.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are very focused on elements of sustainability, not only in how we are, every aspect of what we're doing on the site. Uber, and I'd love to talk about sort of the pieces of that. But to answer your question specifically to Uber, we're one of the first users on the site. They have a test track there on about 42 acres of the site. We have that in place under a license agreement, so they probably won't be there forever. They're a fast-changing company, and their needs will change over the next 3 years of that license agreement. But we're very excited about the partnership we have with them, the work they're actually doing also in the neighborhood to expose young people, I think, to the future of robotics and, you know, artificial intelligence, and they've been really great in that regard. So we are excited about having them there. People wonder what's on the other side of the fence.
Yeah.
The fence is really for safety as much as anything, because they are testing vehicles on that site. Yeah. I've been in those vehicles, and it's great to have them here in the city and making use of this site while it is getting up and going in terms of development.
Yeah.
One of the things that's really awesome about the city of Pittsburgh is we're very techie, we're very innovative, but we're also very entrepreneurial. And unfortunately, it's my belief that one of the problems is, you know, we've got places, huge places for like Google and Carnegie Mellon and other kinds of things like that. But the young entrepreneur that's getting into tech, are there going to be facilities there? Are there going to be incubators there? Low cost rent, high support, all the, you know, things that they need, like high speed internet, so on and so forth.
Let's talk about entrepreneurship and startup. It goes through different stages. And so it's really the first stage of startup does need affordable space. This might not always be the right place for that. These, as you mentioned earlier, these industrial sites are really expensive to prepare and develop. The target that we are looking at is yes, startup to a degree, but what we're also calling this migration space, folks that have sort of been able to use that raw, affordable industrial space that to sort of get the company up and going in the first 1 to 5 years. What we're finding is a major gap is what next, and we want to keep those companies in the city. We think we're an ideal location for particularly that what next stage in startup growth that's often forgotten.
And we have a number of incubators in the city.
We do. A lot of times there's a lot of help getting started, but then when they really need to take that next step towards expansion, it's like, where's the help then? And so we do see different stages of startup, different stages of company evolution. We think we can hit multiple stages of that. But, you know, we do have to be mindful of price points and why startups end up in garages. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to put their money into the investing in the product, not necessarily the real estate in those early years. And so we're really just being mindful about that bigger equation.
Now, we need to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what the actual plan is for that footprint of that 178 acres and what we think is going to end up being there as an integrated system. This is Just Transitions, looking at labor, environment, and health. We'll be right back. Thanks.
Okay. Isn't it funny that right-wing politicians across the country piously rant against giving a few bucks worth of jobless benefits to the needy, then turn around and shove billions of our tax dollars into corporate welfare for the greedy? You're right, it's not funny. But here we go again. We're presently witnessing the most disgusting spectacle yet of the political corporate cabal extracting money from the people's wallets to enrich themselves. Amazon.com, the $136 billion a year internet colossus, has haughtily initiated a sleazy, self-serving public bidding war over where it will locate its new corporate headquarters. The city and state that offer the most bribe money to this private enterprise will be the winner. Uber-rich Amazon doesn't need and certainly doesn't deserve any public handout. But officials in 238 cities have prostrated themselves in front of this Amazonian welfare queen in embarrassing bids to win her nod. Amazon's arrogant executives even sent out a list of basic benefits they expect every applicant to deliver, including, quote, a business-friendly environment and tax structure, free land, a subsidy to reduce its operational costs, tax breaks, relocation grants for executives and workforce, reduced utility bills, and, oh yeah, also give us first-rate schools and an educated labor pool. As one analyst of Amazon's bribery scheme noted, these incentives aren't free. There's no fairy godmother paying for them. The typical result of corporate giveaways is that they cost the public more than we get back. By demanding such corporate spoils, Amazon brands itself as a common thief, not only taking our money, but also stealing our trust in the fairness of the system and widening inequality in our society. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop this corruption, go to goodjobsfirst.org.
Somos la Unión Internacional de los Panaderos, Confiteros y Trabajadores de Tabaco y los Molineros de Grano luchando por los trabajos americanos. Nabisco, fabricante de marcas icónicas como el Oreo, Ritz Crackers y Chips Ahoy, ha ganado la fortuna en América y su respuesta patriótica ha sido enviar los trabajos americanos a México. Como resultado, los consumidores en los Estados Unidos siguen boicoteando los productos hechos en México. Ingresos corporativos han bajado en todo Norteamericana. Los consumidores están enviando un mensaje muy fuerte y claro. Ahora los líderes religiosos de todas las religiones a través de los Estados Unidos están pidiendo una investigación del modelo de negocio de Nabisco y han programado un tour de 6 ciudades para investigar el asunto de manera más profunda. En el mismo momento en que las negociaciones de NAFTA están en la mente de todos, la comunidad religiosa comenzará a hablar de los trabajadores, los políticos y otros líderes religiosos con la intención de discutir el exilio de trabajos por Nabisco desde una perspectiva moral y ética y publicarán ampliamente sus hallazgos. El BCTGM y su socio Justicia Obrera Interconfesional piden a toda la gente de fe y conciencia social que se unan a esta lucha contra la explotación por Nabisco de trabajadores en los Estados Unidos y México. Millones ya están boicoteando los productos de Nabisco hechos en México y ya está afectando sus ganancias de la empresa. Únase a nuestra lucha por la justicia moral y económica. Únase a nosotros en www.fightforamericanjobs.com. www.fightforamericanjobs.com.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter, and you're listening to Just Transitions. And in studio with me today, we've got Patty DeMarco. Patty, welcome back.
Thank you. And my guest today on Just Transitions is Rebecca Flora. She is the Hazelwood Green Project Director for the Almano Partnership, which is taking over the former LTV Coke Works in Hazelwood, Pittsburgh, and now turning it into a green development. And we were going to talk a little bit about what is the plan for the green system that's going on here. Why is this different than any other development project where you just make real estate available and see who shows up?
The vision for this site, and we like to look forward, and so we really feel that through the remediation efforts, the site preparation, a lot of putting in a new access road, all of those have paved the way, literally, or graveled or green infrastructured the way toward what we think is an opportunity for a sustainable development of this site. So we're looking forward. We respect the past of the Coke Works, but we're here to make change and look forward. And so the vision very much is one around not only providing opportunity, real estate space for this innovation economy of companies that are emerging a lot due to some of our universities in the region and the research that's coming out of those. And so first and foremost, we really do see this as a site in the first phase to be about creating jobs and to essentially growing jobs that are a lot focused around that innovation economy that came out of the recent book Brookings report that was released last September. Over time, the vision also essentially does include a mixed-use development. Yep. What is mixed-use today?
Yeah.
Mixed-use today, absolutely, for us, is very much jobs-producing and then essentially, yes, creating places for people to live on that yep. site also. Not so much retail. Mm-hmm. Retail is moving into a new direction, so we think a lot of the retail there will be more service-oriented to support the jobs. We also don't want to pull away from the opportunity for the Hazelwood neighborhood to yep. continue to revitalize its Main Street. And so there has to be a balance yep. Between how we are part of a neighborhood and how we look holistically at what is most suited to be actually in the existing buildings and network of the neighborhood versus what is better suited on a yeah. new site like this. So that's just a few yeah. possibilities, but there's a lot more to tell.
Yeah, well, I know one of the things that I found really exciting as I was looking at the plans for this area is the concept that you're going to model things like all of the buildings will be renewable energy powered. You'll have a system that is energy sufficient as a system from the ground up. And you don't get too many opportunities to do that where you have residential, commercial, and hopefully some sort of production systems that are all designed with the objective of having a sustainable energy system as the base. And that, to me, is one of the most outstandingly exciting parts of this.
Are we talking microgrid?
We're talking about a microgrid, but it's more than just the fuel supply. It's the design of the system mm-hmm. so that you take advantage of using a geothermal system for the heat system and passive and active solar design for the buildings, right?
Let me update you
yeah,
on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
First of all, our sustainability priorities focus around four key areas.
Yeah.
First being absolutely energy, and I'll circle right. back that. Secondly, transportation, because yep. we know transportation is a big part of our carbon footprint
right.
on this earth. Thirdly, water, because mm-hmm. water is obviously a valuable resource. While we don't think of that in Pittsburgh with our three rivers, that is one of the third priorities of our sustainability vision and agenda. The fourth one is socioeconomic. When people think of sustainability, they often only think of environmental sustainability. We are very committed to essentially the three-legged stool of sustainability, which includes the socioeconomic aspects. So with that, I will circle back to energy. For this site, we have set a goal of what we call net positive energy.
Yep.
What does that mean?
Yep.
That means essentially that for the buildings, we can't exactly commit to this for the process and plug loads,
right.
but for the buildings over the course of this development, we have set as a goal that essentially all energy required to you know fuel those buildings would be provided on site through renewable resources.
Mm-hmm.
But our priorities in that start with energy demand first.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially to create the most energy efficient buildings that we can on the site, push down demand.
Right.
Secondly, to the extent that geothermal is feasible, this is a
yep.
very long linear site,
right.
which makes geothermal, in my mind, yet to be proven as
yeah.
the best option for this particular site. Plus, we have a lot of subsurface foundations.
Yes.
The third, then, is, of course, renewable energy sources on site, which start with most likely PVs, photovoltaics.
Yes.
I think the big thing for us is that we have issued an initial request for expression of interest to what we call integrated energy service providers.
Yep.
We have shortlisted seven of those that are globally, nationally known. And we will be issuing an RFP to those seven now to work with us and to submit proposals to be integrated energy service provider on that site. It's a little complex, but it is in fact yeah. about essentially being an on-site utility provider
yeah.
for renewable to help us achieve our net positive goal.
And this is really exciting. I know my borough just finished doing a net zero energy borough building. And within the parameters of the cost of a traditional building, we were able to put up a net zero building even now. But if you have a whole community that are linking such buildings to each other, you have many more options than just the standalone structure. So when you're designing the whole footprint to integrate water management and energy management and transportation profile, it's a very, very exciting possibility. And I think we're going to be looking to see frequent updates on how this happens.
My dream,
yeah,
because my roots go way back in this, is a true holistic community energy vision, which includes not only this site, but actually the Hazelwood neighborhood.
Yes.
We have to get over a lot of hurdles, regulatory as one, to be able to integrate the Hazelwood neighborhood into that bigger vision. But why not think big? I do think that the integrated, you hit it, includes not only the energy, but also the potential for how we integrate water. We have major storm sewer lines running through that site. Can we even pull that into it? So we've really solicited some of the best out there that know how to come up with, I think, solutions that will be national models, if not international models, for how we address this. It's not easy, though.
I understand that.
Very fast.
Yeah.
You're talking a major scale site, long-term phase development, a lot of challenges, but we think a lot of possibilities also.
Absolutely. And I think the concept of integrating the Hazelwood community into this is just so exciting, because reinvestment in a place like that is very exciting to the local people, and also very exciting to people in other places who have long-term brownfield issues. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. How can people find out more about this project and follow what's going on as you progress?
Absolutely. The HazelwoodGreen.com website is really the first place we point people, and we are trying very hard since the rebranding to keep that website very much updated. You can also go to that website and sign up to be part of our quarterly newsletter to be part of that distribution, to actually get updates also. So those are the best sources. But we are Twittering and Instagramming and doing everything else, because really our job right now is to raise awareness and get people engaged in what's happening here, because it's very special.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing your wonderful project with us, and we'll certainly be following your progress as this goes forward.
Great. Thank you all.
Yeah, this is Just Transitions, Labor, Environment, and Health. I'm Patty DeMarco. See you next time. Bye.